And even my parents are like, do you realize that our son has no arms and no legs? My parents said, what if our children have no arms and no legs? You know what she said?
What's that?
Even if all five of our kids have no arms and no legs, at least they have a great example to live from.
Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Don't forget, folks, the Father's Day is on Patreon. Click on the Patreon link in the description. Point down to support our work. All right? And thank you for that in advance. I absolutely appreciate it. I have what I believe to be an amazing guest for you today. I'm black, and they are expecting me to pronounce his last name. I've gone over and over this and over this. I don't know if I'm going to take that risk, but my guest today was born without limbs, no arms, and no legs. And last night when I was preparing for this, I was going through a lot of his stories, interviews on different networks, and things like that. I think it's amazing. I have with me Nick Voyanchik. How did I say it, Nick? Let me hear you say it.
You got it right, Jesse. Nick Voyanchik.
I did? Right on. He's an evangelist, motivational speaker, and New York Times best-selling author. Nick, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome. Any way that we can spread encouraging messages of hope at this time. So thank you.
Someone else had told me about you a couple of years ago, and they said, you need to interview this guy. And so I've been thinking about this off and on, but I had not gone through your information until last night. And I have to tell you, man, you have an amazing story. It's so encouraging.
Oh, I appreciate that very, very much. And I just want to let everyone know that hope is for everyone. And it's not that I'm some kind of guru who knows more or helping everyone pivot in a perfect formula. I think we're all going through challenges, and I just want to help people to reframe and redefine impossible and change obstacles into opportunities. So I'm excited to get into today's interview.
Yeah, I read that 1 billion people in the world, that's a B, billion, who knows about you. Is that true?
It is true. Sir, we've done 74 countries, and I've had the privilege of meeting 21 presidents and vice presidents, and I've become a youth advisor to three national governments against bullying and teen suicide prevention, and also integrating the special needs children into society and education systems in some countries that are still bridging that. So it has been incredible. We actually, these days, we kind of estimate actually a billion people in China and a billion people outside of China. And as an Aussie whose parents were from Yugoslavia, Where I now live with my wife and my four kids in California, it's unbelievable. They say that I run so fast, I leave my legs behind. And so with technology, we've been able to try and hug the world and let them know that with faith, family, and friends, we can overcome all challenges.
How old are you now?
37, sir.
So at 37, what is it like to be known by 1 billion people around the world?
Well, first of all, if I had fingers, I'd pinch myself just because every time I look at my beautiful wife and my four beautiful children, I feel like I'm living my dream.
Yeah.
It was the biggest dream. But for me, you know, coming from a 10-year-old kid who attempted suicide, trying to drown myself in my bathtub because I felt like I had no hope, because I felt like I had no greater purpose in my life and that I'd be bullied for the rest of my life, to now understanding that we all have a story. And that when you don't get a miracle, you can still be one. Knowing that there are many people who know something about me, you know how it is being in the spotlight. First of all, I can't go cognito, but that's the least of the things. But unfortunately, even, you know, in recent months and things, it's difficult in one sense, but it's also a joy to know that everyone who's in the spotlight really has to go to a point of vulnerability and knowing that there are people out there who might misuse what you do. But really, we've had an extremely awesome experience, and it's definitely been faster and bigger than I'd ever thought. And I couldn't do it without my family, my faith, and then the teams that we have as well. I have a nonprofit organization and I have a for-profit company. We have a lean team and couldn't do it alone.
Which are you more grateful for, your wife and kids or the fame?
Oh, my wife and kids by far.
Yeah.
You know, fame, money, drugs, sex, alcohol, pornography, fame and fortune. If you put your happiness in temporary things, your happiness will be temporary.
Yeah.
And knowing that we're made of a soul and a spirit and a mind and then the body, you know, I really feel that everything begins with the truth of your own value, being self-aware of your value, that whether you're married or not, whether you're known or not, whether you have a job or not, your value as a human being has nothing to do with the outside tangibles.
Yeah.
As much as you knowing that you're a beautiful, irreplaceable human being, no matter what. And then when we have our soul and spirit in line, then in my mind, I have a renewed way of thinking. And then with that thought, then I go and do. And it's a process. You know, it's again, it's not a formula, but I feel like we all go through challenges. And many people look at me, Jesse, and say, wow, it must be so difficult to have no arms and no legs. And I tell them, first of all, I think it's the disabilities of the heart and mind where we actually get in our own way of our full potential, but definitely chasing after money or fame, that was not the intention at all. In fact, the way that I started speaking, I have to tell you, Jesse, guess who the person was who inspired me to be a speaker?
Who was that?
The janitor who cleaned the toilets at my high school looked at me one day and he said, you're going to be a worldwide speaker. And I said, you're a crazy old man. And he said, let me organize the first speech of yours. I said, man, no. For 3 months, I said, no. He twisted my arm. I said, yes. And I got up in front of these five students and my palms were sweating. My knees were shaking because public speaking is one of the biggest fears of mankind, according to Google. And these girls started crying. And in my early times of speaking here and speaking there, my life changed forever at 19 years old when a teenage girl wept on my shoulder. She said, thank you. No one's ever told me that they love me. No one's ever told me that I'm beautiful the way that I am. And that's when I knew I'm either going to be angry for what I don't have or go for it and try be a miracle even when I don't have one myself.
That's amazing, man. That's an amazing story.
Well, thank you. And I, you know, and it's a stewardship of that story. And so, you know, me as a speaker and, you know, every speaker right now, every speaking engagement has been canceled. And for now, and it's been really pushing me and forcing me to going online. And that's why I appreciate technology where I've started my own podcast, my own YouTube channel. We've got 12 million social media fans, but I've never really engaged with them. So it's all organic. Yeah. And so I'm having to relearn that, and I'm just able to be, you know, reaching people without having to travel as well. So I'm actually really happy about that.
That's amazing. And I wish you well with that. I want to get into your birth situation, but first let me ask, when you consider suicide that day in the bathroom, can you describe the feeling and the thoughts? What was that like in those moments?
Yeah, first of all, leading up to that, my first thoughts of suicide, Jesse, was actually at age 8. And it was because bullying was prevalent in just like any other school. But it felt like the whole world was against me because I didn't have what the whole world had. I also had, even though loving parents, I also felt like the isolation factor and looking ahead in my life thinking, who's going to want to marry me? Who's going to want to employ me?
Yeah.
I'm always just going to be a dependent on somebody else. And maybe I'm just a burden to everyone. If I'm just going to be bullied for the rest of my life and no one has any answers for me, what's the point of continuing life and living on? And so at age 8, I was on the kitchen counter watching my mom cook. I used to love doing that. Just watching her was so therapeutic for me. But then I realized one day after bullying at school, I'm like, what if I just jump off the kitchen counter and try just go head first, snap my neck, and then just try kill myself? But then I heard of some people who snap their neck and they're still alive. So that wouldn't be. So I started thinking through this. And I'm thinking, I know what I could do. I could drown myself. And 2 years later, I actually told my dad, Dad, can I go into the bathtub? I just want to soak in there for a little bit. And as he closed the door, I was in my bathtub, and it was the first time I'd ever seen my bathtub as my coffin. I was so angry at life. I was so alone, and I felt like there was no hope for me. And as I turned over, I tried to let water come into my lungs. And it's very scary trying to take your own life. and letting air come into my lungs, and then just a lot of emotion, a lot of adrenaline. And then on the third time, I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to do it. I was stopped with one thought in my mind. What if I actually went through with it? What would my parents feel like? They did nothing but love me.
Yeah.
They did nothing but say, you're beautiful, you're special, God's got a plan for you. And I didn't want to leave them with that pain. And I didn't go through with that suicide. The first turning point out of that depression wasn't some kind of magic wand. I needed time. I needed to really start to believe that I had something to be thankful for apart from my family. And my first turning point was actually playing soccer, hurting my foot so bad I couldn't walk. I have a little left 6-inch appendage to the bottom left of my torso that's called my foot. I have a heel and two toes, which now I can type 53 words a minute on a normal computer.
Yeah,
and at age 13, I was in bed for 3 weeks and I realized, wow, I have a choice. Either to be angry for what I don't have or be thankful for what I do have. And that was the first mental shift of the attitude of gratitude that helped me to get out of that depression.
So when you got in the bathtub and you drank the water, did someone come in and save you from it, or how did you overcome that?
So what happened was I let water come in, coughed it back out twice, and then I'm talking to myself. I'm like, you know what? I got to do this. You got to do this. There is no hope. And I went over, filled my lungs up back again. And that at that moment, when I was trying to let the water in my lungs the third time, that's when I stopped and I was able to cough it back out. And I didn't tell anyone that I actually attempted suicide until much later on in life.
Oh, I see.
I told my brother, who was 8 at the time, that I think at 21 years old, I told my brother I might then end my life because I could see myself going through school, but after school, I feel like there was no purpose for me at all. And so he told Dad. I said, don't tell Dad. My dad came in, and I'll never forget it. He came and he said, what's this? You want to kill yourself? And he put his hand on my face. He said, look, don't worry. Just don't give up. Don't give up. Know that we love you.
Amazing. Were you hearing voices in your head telling you that it was not worth living?
Absolutely.
And did the voices sound like your voices, or what convinced? It sounded like your voices telling you that you were telling yourself that?
That's an interesting question, Jesse. I think that there were two different voices. First of all, I always tell people that we think that we may have the three people that we can identify as the biggest encouragers in our life and the three biggest discouragers in our life. But the truth is, we are our biggest encourager and discourager. We allow people. So the first voices that I heard were actually the taunts and bullying and teasing that I heard at school. I could hear those people's voices in my head, where it only took about 2 or 3 seconds for them to give me the look, give me the eye, shun me away, or tell me something that I then went home and let repeat in my head again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
And then you have your voice, where based on what you feel, based on what you know, and based on what you see, you then make conclusions that are based on fear. Now, not all fear is bad. Jesse, you know that. We've got rational fear, but then we've got irrational fear. It is the moment where my parents saw me and the doctor said, sorry, we didn't give you a chance to abort your child because he's never going to walk, he's never going to go to school, he's never going to have a good life. And my parents, though, chose to embrace me as I am. Whenever they saw me was when I was already born, but they said, but we would have embraced you anyway. For me, it's me embracing me. And when I embrace me, then that's when people see that if I have a self-acceptance, if I'm embracing my situation and my value as a human being, it helped. But the only way to do that was actually to get rid of those voices that were in my voice, saying the negative things, holding those thoughts captive, taking it out, and then replacing with my own voice something good. And one thing that I did at age 6 was I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, Nick? And I said, yes. There are people who tease you for how you look. There's got to be something good about you. Look at your eyes. Your eyes are the windows to your soul. And no matter how different you may look on the outside, when they're looking in the eyes and you look at them in the eyes, You've got beautiful eyes and you're a beautiful soul, no matter what they say. And I'll never forget someone said, when the world is not good enough, get a second opinion. The problem is when we ourselves let our own voices tell us we're not good enough. And that is the thing that I try to break chains off in minds and hearts all around the world.
I know that you are an evangelist, which means that you have read the Bible, right? You read the Bible before.
Yes, and every day I try to read a little bit because I need a lot more today than good days.
Have you ever read in the Bible that you to bring every thought into captivity, that you are not your thoughts, that they are not from you, they are not from God? God's voice is a voiceless voice. He revealed, and Satan talked to you. He imitates you or whomever. And so, but because you identify with those voices, you think that they are your own. But Satan is imitating you, sounding like you. So when you listen to those voices, the real you is listening to the not you, and you should not do that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I love that you bring that up, because we know that God is real and we know that the devil is real. There are angels and principalities of darkness, and I've seen them actually. And I've seen demons in my life. I've gone around the world and I've seen witchcraft and I've seen exorcisms. I've seen miracles as well. God actually even healed a hollowing in my spine years ago, and I know that he's real. And as I read the Bible, you're right. We know that it's his gentle voice. I've never heard the audible voice of God, and I've never heard the audible voice of the devil, but we do know it's against powers and principalities of darkness. And that's why I read my Bible, because I know that there's only one way to fight the lies that I'm ugly, that there is no hope. It's with the truth that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, and that I'm not alone. And I just want to say this to you, Jesse. You know, when I go around the world and I meet many people, I never tell people that I understand their pain. I tell teenagers all the time that I believe it's worse being in a broken home than having no arms and legs. And I don't know how it feels to be in a broken home. But I came across a little boy with no arms and no legs during a speech. And that's when I realized, wow, I know that I don't hold the pen in my hand. If I had the pen in my hand, I would be in full control of my destiny and my future. I don't have that. And that's when I surrender it to God, and where I can say, hey, my history is then his story to help someone else. And I'll never forget how that little boy with no arms and no legs was encouraged because he sees Uncle Nick just like him. And I thought to myself so many times at school, why can't I just meet someone else like me so then I know that I'm not alone? How cool would it be if a limbless speaker came to my school and told everyone to shut their mouth and stop bullying me? Well, I didn't get that miracle, but I became that miracle for little Daniel. And Jesse, I believe we all can be a helping hand and a miracle for someone else.
I agree. So I want people to understand who might not be aware of your story. You were literally born with no arms at all and no legs. From the waist down, you have no legs at all.
That's correct.
That's right, right?
That's correct.
And so why did that happen?
Great question. So back in the 1970s, the theory, when I was born in 1982, they allowed a drug called it was thalidomide, where it would help pregnant women with morning sickness, which later found out that would give birth defects to babies. However, my mom actually in Australia, it's different than America. My mom as a midwife actually would do from A to Z, kind of like in America what they do with the doctor and the nurses.
Right.
As a midwife in Australia, she did the whole thing, and she was in charge of a whole department of hospitals in the birthing suite up until her firstborn son, which was me. So she knew everything about nursing, pregnancy. She didn't touch caffeine, nor even alcohol. She actually says that she has a premonition that something would go wrong and that she was extra careful. And so there's only one theory, brother, that I can tell you that I don't know if this is true, but there are some doctors who, I mean, I still come across children who were born without limbs. We've met 30 who were all under the age of 15, and they don't know why. And the new theory here in modern medicine is that whatever cells that were me at a point, for some reason, the mother could have had a close miscarriage, and then I stopped developing different cells, and what was developed grew at that time. That is the only medical explanation that is still a theory today.
So when your parents saw you, when you came out and your parents saw you, did they want to throw the baby back?
Yeah, pretty much. You know,
I throw this baby back.
Yeah, he needs some more cooking. wait, what's going on? Yeah, it was a huge shock.
That's amazing. So at what age did you start to realize you were different than other kids? When did it hit you?
It hit me when I first went to school. Up until I went to school at age 5 or 6, I was surrounded by, we're a European family, former Yugoslavia, Serbia. And I was surrounded by 24 first cousins and friends, close friends, but mainly family and very close friends. And everyone knew that, they called me Nicky back then. Nicky had no arms and no legs, but it wasn't a big deal. And it was when people looked at me, and not just ask me why. It was so silly sometimes, Jesse. I didn't know what to say. They're like, what happened to you? And I just say, cigarettes. And, you know, and because sometimes they're like, what happened? I say, I don't know. And they say, what? You're dumb as well? And that's what I'm like, man, like, what do I do? So it was, I think, that time in my life where I realized I was very different.
Amazing. So do you feel different? Then because since you were born without the arms and without the legs, do you feel that anything is missing? Even though you know the legs and arms are missing, do you feel like anything is missing?
I'm going to tell you right now. First of all, I am thankful to be alive. Second of all, there are still days where I wish I had arms and legs to pick up my kids and hold them, to play catch with them, to pick up my wife and throw it in the pool. There are times and days that I still get frustrated. Just because I'm a speaker and I have found hope, it doesn't mean that we don't continue to battle through challenges and go through ups and downs for sure.
So at times, even now being famous, you're married, you have kids, within your body, within you, you still have those emotional moments, challenge to deal with?
It feel like I would say they're more thoughts than emotional challenges.
Yeah.
You know, I'm blessed. I have a caregiver who helps me, you know, and I never wanted to have a wife who's my caregiver. But I feel like the completeness, and this is really interesting for all the viewers and listeners right now, for those watching, it's not about the outside.
Right.
It's all about the inside.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I'm lacking nothing, and I'm actually living life to its fullest. It doesn't mean that everything's smooth and great and that we've got everything together. But yeah, I love being a father, a husband to my wife. And, you know, it's been an incredible journey. Only at 37 years old, you know, 6 books translated in 42 languages, and the letters that we get of how people's lives have been transformed. That's kind of what I go back to remind myself in those little moments like, hey, let's go back to what has actually happened, and that's been amazingly far beyond my imagination.
Amazing. So there are times when you get the thoughts, you know how you get thoughts and then you get feelings, emotions. You do deal with those things sometimes.
I do.
Amazing. While growing up in high school, I know you graduated from high school. Did you go to college as well?
I did go to college. My dad told me, Nick, you need to become a millionaire and start your own business so then your employees can be your hands and feet.
Yeah.
When I wanted something at the store, I wouldn't get it. They said, get money yourself and buy it yourself. So I vacuumed the floor for $2 a week, and it taught me dignity, goal setting, patience, and it really helped me to have a decision-making process for what do I really want and what am I going to put my life goal towards. I was introduced to the stock market at age 16. I went into it as a teenager. I went into real estate investing because of one book that changed my life, Money Secrets of the Rich by John R. Burley. I read that book twice, took notes with my mouth on my notepad, and that was my beginning of my financial literacy. I went to college in a double degree in accounting and financial planning. And I'm CEO of both my for-profit company and my nonprofit company. And I graduated at 21. And at that age, that's when I was realizing I was born to fly around the world and become a speaker. And that has all helped me in my business life and investments and the financial decisions we have to make as a family. And my goal was to retire my parents. And I did that 6 years before my dad died of cancer at 63. I told my mom I would buy her a convertible, and I got there. But that doesn't mean that any of the goals that we have always come true.
Yeah.
I mean, look at COVID-19 right now. It doesn't matter what plan, what goal you had. We are all back at ground zero in some way, shape, or form. And so that's the point. It's not saying, oh, but Nick was different. No, I'm not different. But see where you are, see what you have, set your goals, and do something today toward that goal.
So going through high school and college, did you date?
Did I date? Yeah. Look, I wanted to date badly. I wanted the affirmation of someone, I'm not, not everyone looks for a spouse, but I certainly was. And definitely, I felt like I was shorthanded in the competition out there. I had asked several girls out during the high school years of mine.
Right.
And they all said no. And then there were some girls that liked me who asked me out. And I'm like, no, sorry, I don't feel anything. So it wasn't like, it was weird on that. So it wasn't, it was interesting. There was one relationship that I did have, someone that I did meet before I met my wife, and that was a difficult 5 or 6 year kind of process for us in finding out that unfortunately that we wouldn't be together. But she has her own family now, and I have mine. And it was in 2010 that I met my amazing wife, Kanae. She's half Japanese, half Mexican. We call that Japsican. And we met actually at an intimate speaking engagement, and it was love at first sight. I looked at her, she looked at me, and I couldn't feel my legs.
Amazing.
She's incredible. She's incredible.
She's beautiful too. So, but let me ask, like, when you, while going through high school and college, were you afraid to approach women?
At times I was, but at that time, I have to say that my confidence was much greater than it was in elementary school.
Yeah.
You see, at that time, 15 years old, was when I started my faith journey, got my soul and spirit aligned. And then the renewing of my mind was happening over the age of 15, 16, 17. At age 17, I did find that I was pretty good at mathematics and speaking. And pivoting on that, I then got voted on the student government, kind of as a vice president, and had some good, how would you say, clout with everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone knew that I basically tried to just get along with everyone. And at that time, I had confidence. So, no, I wasn't shy at the time. Let's just say that.
I know guys who have both legs, both arms, and they are afraid to approach girls. It's hard for them to get a girl.
Yeah. Look, you gotta understand that no one can do it for you. Your mama ain't going to come and say, hey, you should go and talk to so-and-so's daughter. You're going to get up, man, and put yourself out there. Do what you only feel is comfortable. But understand, look, I tell teenagers and young people all the time, my twin daughters, I've got twin, identical twin daughters. They're 2 years old. They're never going to have a boyfriend. They're going to be looking for a husband.
Yeah.
And I'll let them go out for a coffee with someone when they can say, daddy, I think I'm of age to take someone out to coffee because he actually might be my future possible soulmate and father of my children. We were taught that way. There's no dating.
Yeah.
And sex, man, is the biggest distraction for these, for any young person, where we get so emotionally entangled. Where even I'm not just saying in category of which gender, but let's just say that it feels as though that if I can please my boyfriend or girlfriend this way, then that makes me feel needed and wanted, when we understand sex itself ain't love.
That's right.
You can sleep with anyone you want as many times you want, still wonder, do they love me? So coming back to the truth of Who do I want? And just recently on my podcast, we're talking about short-term needs. You know, sometimes we have this ideology of what this person kind of looks like, how they should look, how they should laugh, how much money should be, you know, in their bank account. But in the end, even if Prince Charming comes, it actually may not be what you need.
Yeah.
And so coming back to a self-awareness of your personality, is it that you have a gift and passion in something wherein you may need someone to have that common interest to help you accomplish that and complete your life? Or is it someone that we take time to realize, oh my gosh, I may need someone who doesn't think like me, who doesn't look like me, you know, it doesn't come from the same background as me, yeah, to complement me in the strengths when I'm weak. So it's understanding, it's the facade, it's the outside. It got nothing to do with who you actually may end up with and what we actually need.
So how did you meet your wife? Your wife is a beautiful lady.
She is.
How did you meet her and what made her say yes?
I love these questions. so we met at in Texas and at a small engagement, and we were all dressed up. It was at the time, I felt chemistry. Really complicated story. I'll simplify it. She had a boyfriend at the time, and I found out later.
Right.
Her former boss wanted to hook me up. Get this. Not with my wife, but my wife's sister. They were both there that night. So her boss asked me, so what do you think? And I said, she's one of the most beautiful souls I've ever met in my life. So she thought I'm talking about my wife's sister when I was talking about my wife. And then I found out my wife had a boyfriend at the time. And I'm like, what? It's like the classic soap opera.
Yeah.
So I walked away, didn't text, no calls. I figured it out. Wow, we have a communication, miscommunication. And 6 months later, I was back in Dallas. And we happened to meet up in a group setting. And at the time, it was the pinnacle of my wife's thoughts where she knew that her boyfriend was not going to be the guy that she wanted to marry. And when we met, that chemistry was even stronger. And we started courting, dating. And what was really amazing for me, Jesse, why did she say yes? I still like am so thankful she did.
Yeah.
You know, I put a ring on in a cream puff. We got a sailboat rental in Santa Barbara, a tray of cream puffs, the one with the powdered sugar. I got her to feed me that one. I finished the cream puff without choking on the ring, and I said, baby, let me kiss your hand, and I put the ring on her finger. And the interesting thing was she, in our relationship, for her, why did she say yes? There is one point where she was telling herself and telling God, God, I just want someone to fight for me. And we had an interesting kind of text going on that day. And she had this thought in the shower in Texas while I'm in California, and I call her. And I said, babe, we've been going out for 9 months. I just want to tell you something. I'm going to fight for you. And that, so for her, it was this, I know I love him.
Yeah.
I know that I could see my life with him. And even my parents are like, do you realize that our son has no arms and no legs? My parents said, what if my, you know, what if our children have no arms and no legs? You know what she said?
What's that?
Even if all five of our kids have no arms and no legs, at least they have a great example to live from. And that blew my parents away. On my wedding day, my dad said, son, I just want to tell you, I actually didn't think you'd ever get married. And not only did you marry somebody, she's amazing on the inside now. And for me, Jesse, how did I know that she was the one? In 2008, you know, World Economic Crisis, right?
Yes.
I was touched by that difficult time in my speaking career. And 2011, I was diversified enough at the time. However, in 2011, I took on too many projects and I had a cash flow crisis. Someone stole 50G from me and many projects took twice as long, twice as costly, and revenue wasn't there. And basically was on the brink of just about to fold the for-profit. And I got through it, but at that time, I went through panic attacks. I told my wife, we were only dating 3 months of our relationship into that time, and I said, babe, I lost all my money. Do you know what she said? don't worry, babe. I'll get a nursing job and support the both of us.
Amazing.
And that's, I'm like, man, I want to marry that woman. So
amazing.
That's our love story.
Yeah. What does a panic attack feel like?
It feels like you're dying. I don't know if anyone has, I don't know if you've experienced it, but I had it actually for 30 days straight. And it was the point, and it was the complex. It wasn't that I had a crisis in my faith or belief, but I really felt that those projects was what I was supposed to do. But I learned through that just because I had the money to do it, just because I could build a team to execute it, it didn't mean that the time was then.
Right.
And I shouldn't take on more than I can handle. And so I'm a visionary and I'm very aggressive with building things. And that's just how I am. If someone says I can't do it, it even like gives me more fire.
Right.
To like, nah, man, because that's what I've been told my whole life. And so panic attacks make me, when I was waking up in the morning, before I even wake up, it feels like I've never had a heart attack, but it feels like I was having a heart attack, where I take deep breaths in and I couldn't breathe. My heart's beating out of my chest and I can't even think. Mental numbness, depression, sadness, sorrow, denial, grieving of what could have happened, fear of maybe even losing this, finally the person who loves me, that I love them. What if she leaves me now? I'm not at my best. So all these things, panic is something that debilitates us more than having no arms and legs.
And so you had that for 1 month straight?
I did, sir. 30 days straight. January 2011.
But yet, were you able to still function even though inside you were panicking like that?
So at that time, I only had one speaking engagement that month. I'm so thankful for that. And it was actually a speaking engagement where you as a speaker, right? You get up and you're supposed to give and share.
Yeah.
And it was actually this really cool drug addiction rehab center up in Ventura, Teen Challenge. And they sang some songs that really filled me up. I had people pray for me, encourage me to have enough to function and get on stage to just be real. I think any speaker who's not real will eventually fail.
Yeah.
Or they'll be miserable for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
I'm not that speaker. But I will say that functioning on a normal way, no. Even this year, Jesse, I'm going to tell you, when COVID-19 started happening, it was the second or third week of January, because I watch world news, because I have friends in 43 countries. I've been to 74 countries. I've been to China 37 times. And I got the news of COVID-19. And I told my friends, my family, stock up on groceries. I didn't say toilet paper. Stock up on groceries. And get ready. It's going to be bad. And I ordered my masks. My masks just came in the mail last week. And it was something that I realized, well, as all these things have happened, even though I felt like I saw it coming before some other people, it still hurt me in my business. And what do I do now? Do I go for a spokesmanship deal with big companies? Do I do a podcast? Do I not? Do I go into coaching? And it really got me for a loop. Even now, I can tell you, there were a couple of weeks where I had mental blocks. I wasn't functioning as I normally would. I had a little bit of panic. I think we all go through that.
So when you're having a panic, are you hurting from head to toe? You can feel the pain all in your body from head to toe?
No, I think more of just a numbness in my brain to explain it, in those layman's terms.
Right.
Where I'm kind of like just staring and like, what happened and what? No one has. This is the interesting thing. It's when no one else has any more information than you and no one can tell the future. And so it's like, OK, this is a very interesting unknown of uncharted territory. But all you can do is one day at a time and just don't sit there. Right. That's what I realized. Look back at your last obstacles. Look back at your last challenges. Did you make it? Did you get through? You know, there are people who get laid off. There are people, unfortunately, that have loss in their life. There are people who may have to close their company. But it's not the end of our story. If one chapter ends, it just means another one's coming. If that means for us to give ourselves a little bit of time and take a break, take a beat, take a breath,
yeah,
and go back to what we're thankful for. And remember, this ain't the first chaotic situation, and it probably won't be the last.
That's
so
right.
What can we learn from, how can we grow, and how will we be stronger on the other side?
I got to ask this. I noticed in going through and watching some of your videos, you have 1 foot, right?
I do.
And are you, when you're walking, because I saw you playing golf and driving a boat and typing and cooking and all those things for yourself, when you're walking, are you walking on that 1 foot, or are you walking around your bottom?
Great question. So where I stand right now, I'm sitting. This is the funniest thing. I feel like a little tomato. This is me sitting and this is me standing. And so when I'm standing, it's almost like a three-legged stool, to tell you. I've got two bones where my legs would have started, at the bottom of my pelvis.
Right.
That joint. So I actually stand on two bones.
Oh.
When I or sit on two bones. So I always trying to make sure that my tush is on plush, cushiony stuff. I put a cush on my tush just to, you know, my bones.
Yeah.
But then when I walk, I have also a 55 degree curve in my spine that is evolved because of how I walk. So the center point of gravity has shifted to my left because I only have a left foot. And while I walk, when I pivot, I go from my buttocks to my foot and pivot all my weight on that little foot.
Right.
And so I basically do that. And that's how I walk. And my body so far, so good. I do have daily pain in my back. I have massage therapy once a week, right, on average, that helps me to loosen my muscles and bones and tissue. It is so far 37, so good.
Right on, man. I thought it was amazing too that you're able to, and you're blessed that you're able to have sex and make babies.
Yep. You know what? I'm thankful that I've been able to be given that. And people who are able to have that not always can conceive.
Yeah.
And the question that I really had to my parents as well was, you know, my secret wonderings of how would that all be? And would I even conceive? We don't know, but the theory was, well, just like anybody else, you got the same chance. And so if you got the same part, you got the same chance. And so I was just like, hey, well, I can't promise anybody anything, but you know, it's been incredible. I mean, are you kidding me? Two sons and two daughters.
I know, man. That's amazing.
8, 7 and younger, and biologically we're done. Biologically, we have a heart for the foster kids and kids waiting to be adopted. We sponsor 15 children worldwide who don't have food, who don't have education or shelter,
right,
and we help them around the world. And our nonprofit has helped those in need as well. But we're blessed, man. Absolutely blessed. Blessed is the right word.
So you live in Australia, or do you live in the United States?
15 years ago, I moved from Australia to California, and it seems as though we'll be moving to Dallas, Texas soon.
Amazing. I got to ask, what is, do you believe in the spiritual order of God and Christ, Christ and man over woman, and woman over children?
Slow it down a little bit. God
and Christ.
Yes.
Christ and man Christ over woman, and woman over children.
No, you know what? Look, we know that there are some parts of the Bible of authority in some way, shape, or form, but the Bible's really clear that every single one of us have equal value in the sight of God, and that there are some things where, I mean, many people say, I don't know if you get into this, but the authority that a man has over a woman, first of all, we know that it's evil to believe that any human being is more valuable or more important than someone else, whether that's a nation declaring that they cured their country of Down syndrome because they aborted every child with Down syndrome. Or whether it's gender, in any order, or children, it's understanding that everyone has value. And so that's the one thing that I understand, that I am to be respected by my wife, but at the same time, love my wife like Christ loved the church. And so what wouldn't I do for my wife? There's nothing. And so does that mean everything and anything that I could do in my power to serve my wife? In fact, I want you to know that the people that I'm first serving is God and Christ, the Trinity, God the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, my wife second, my children third. And then after that, my priority is how will I provide tangibly for my family, and then how can I make the world a better place after that?
So do you believe that you're the head of your wife?
You know what? She would definitely believe that too, but she also says, but she's the neck, so the neck moves the head.
So do you believe you're the head?
Jesus is our whole head, our household head, but yeah, if you want to ask me, do I have authority in my home? As the leader in our home, we do. Yep, it's me.
And so are you the head of your wife?
Does she respect me and do I suggest things? Yes. Does she mostly agree with the things that we actually agree on everything? But I also know at the same time, Jesse, that she has her own mind and her own conviction. And that's the beautiful thing about how we come equally as a married partner. We actually ask each other three different questions every month. What am I doing that you want me to stop doing? What am I not doing that you want me to start doing? And what is something that I'm doing well that you want me to continue to do? Now, if that then brings a different dimension to the answer, it's knowing that she's my best friend.
And so are you the head of your wife?
Where are you getting at? Tell me, what do you want? You're funny, Jesse. Are you trying to twist my arm?
Well, I just want to know, you are an evangelist and you're very blessed and you're representing good. Are you the head of your wife?
I never disrespectfully use that authority that God has given me, correct?
And so are you the head of your wife?
Okay, this has been the best, funniest interview I've ever had in my life. Jesse, you're the man. Am I the... You want me to ask her?
No,
there you go. If I have to ask her, am I the head? Isn't that funny?
I know.
Yes, Jesse, tell me. I am.
You are the head of your wife?
Oh, my God. You are so funny. You want me to say... I said yes. You want me to say
oh, okay.
No? What do you want, brother?
So you said yes? Yeah. And does she obey you?
I love you so much. Yes, she's a very obedient wife. I can't wait to show her this interview. This is the best, Jesse. This is so great.
Is it true that the man came from God and the woman came from the man?
Okay, I need to stop you and say, where are you going from? Where are you going to? No, the understanding is man and woman came from God. How God made Adam was from dust. So if you're trying to frame that woman was made out of man, then man was not made of God. Man was made out of dust. But then God made the dust and his wind and breath that's like nothing else. So he can choose to make a donkey speak. He can choose to have a man without arms and legs to be his hands and feet and stand in front of the gates of hell and redirect traffic. If that's the God that we're talking about, nah, man, he doesn't favor sons over daughters. That's not the God.
So isn't it true that God created man from the dust and then he breathed himself into the man? And then at some point, he put the man asleep and from the man's body, he created woman.
Technically, that is what the Bible says. But
so
in context of everything I said, yep.
So you believe that to be true?
Do I believe that the Bible
Do you believe that situation is true?
Do I believe that God made Adam and Eve that way? Yes, I do.
That the woman came from the man.
Well, God created man and woman and everything we have, correct?
Do you believe that the woman came from the man?
No, because if he created man, then he would have created woman on his own.
But if he said he took the woman from the man body, he took the bone from the body and created the woman, would she be coming from the man?
No, it's always from God. Why God used a rib? Why not use a finger? Why not use his ear? Why put him to sleep? There's a lot of things in the Bible right there I'm not too sure of.
Amazing.
But, yeah.
What is a man?
What is a man?
Yes.
A man. You know, I think that's different for many people. For me as a man, who am I as a man?
No, what is a man?
What is a man? Definitely someone who, I don't know. Where are you going with this?
I'm just asking the question, what is a man?
What is a man? A man is same as a woman, though, so I'd have to say that. We are beings with a soul that's eternal, a spirit, a mind, clothed in a body.
Did you say a man is same as a woman?
The value as
now, I'm only asking, what is a man?
Yeah, a soul, spirit, mind, and body.
What is love?
Love. Selflessness. In one word, selflessness.
Is there love, other... Go ahead.
Love is, to me, they say that fear is the most powerful emotion. I would have to say that if that's true for someone out there, I think then the close second would be love. I think love, when you control your fear, there is just something more powerful about love. But when you love someone and you love your child, there is nothing that you would not do for that person you love. And I feel like that is the most powerful thing. It's other when it's true, it's unconditional.
Other than the physical, what is the difference between men and women?
I don't understand your question.
Other than the physical,
mm-hmm.
What is the difference between men and women?
To me, whether you're any of the genders, then you know that you're still a spirit, soul, mind, and a body.
Other than the physical, what is the difference between men and women?
Sorry, I don't understand where you want to go with this, bro.
No, I'm just asking you, other than the physical, what is the difference between men and women?
Well, I mean, I could look at me and my wife, for example, where there are still no, though, everyone has different personalities. You know, I think that if you go beyond a spirit and a body and a mind and a soul, then you're really only talking about more like personalities that really, you know, it really depends on how you were raised. Whether you had a difficult childhood or not, your view of life and your decisions and your priorities and what you think is important and valuable, it really comes from who you are, what you've seen, what you experience, and what you think that goes based to your moral beliefs and your faith system. So for me and my wife, you know, she nurtures the children in a way that I can't nurture them. I nurture them in other ways that I think my wife can't. And so it's not that she can't, it's just whether that's personality, whether that just comes naturally within the chemistry of our home. What I've realized that even between children, you know, when you have four different children, you raise them up the same, but they come out all differently. And that's what me and my wife realized, that every single person is different and unique. Even brought up in our own household, we actually have learned to make sure that we spend individual time with each of these children and in the way that they feel most close to us and nurture that relationship, not just together as siblings, but together with mom and dad.
We're running out of time here, and this has been an amazing interview. But
it's been so much fun, Jesse.
No, it's been amazing. I got to ask, are you?
I'm gonna say that. Amazing.
Amazing. I got to ask, are you a beta male or an alpha male?
Wait, help me understand. What's the difference
between a beta male and an alpha male?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry. I think I know what the alpha is. Isn't that more like aggressive or personality type? I don't know what a beta male is.
More like a Donald Trump. Donald Trump would be considered an alpha male.
Okay. I have to say I'd be alpha for sure. For sure.
Do you support abortion?
Absolutely not. The people who support abortion, I just challenge them to know that if I was in my mother's womb, that I would be a classic example of a quality of life. And now look at literally hundreds of millions of people who know the full story about how a man without arms and legs found hope.
Yeah,
I mean, it just helps us to understand that you must give all life a chance at succeeding, because in the end, we take the pen out of God's hand.
That's right.
And that's not our place.
That's right.
And I think it's actually a shame of nations to believe that abortion is not such a big deal. And I love everyone, and I'm not saying that I understand every case of every woman, but I'm just going to say, no matter what, in my experience, in my life, in my opinion, all life is precious.
Nick, we got to heat up this interview, so I got to throw you in the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible, all right?
Okay, be careful with me. Be nice to me.
Do you believe it's possible to live forever?
Yes.
What is the biggest crowd you've ever spoken to?
800,000 people face-to-face in Ukraine, 2017 in September, with 53 million people watching on TV.
Communism or socialism? I mean, communism or capitalism?
Capitalism.
What is the best thing about Australia?
The best thing about Australia? We don't throw a shrimp on the barbie, for the record. It's the Gold Coast beaches.
Amazing. Who is the most inspiring speaker you ever heard?
Oh my gosh, this is hard. Zig Ziglar, John Maxwell, and Les Brown. Those are, to me, the top three speakers that's ever happened.
Amazing. Are you a feminist?
No.
Will Madonna go into heaven?
Excuse me?
Will Madonna go into heaven?
I can't tell you that. I'm not sure. I'm not God.
You know who Madonna is, right?
Oh, I know who she is.
Like a virgin.
I hear your team chuckling in the back, man. You're something else, man.
Is it possible to have perfect peace?
Yes.
I'm not sure if you discuss politics, but do you vote?
I just got my citizenship, so I wasn't able to vote.
Oh, okay. So do you know if you supported the Great White Hope?
The Great White Hope. For me, it actually comes back to me coming back to the vote on actual abortion. And that, to me, makes things a little clearer for me.
So you will be voting for the Great White Hope again. You know who the Great White Hope is, right?
Tell me who it is, Jesse.
Donald Trump, of course.
Well, if I can vote, and he is the only candidate that brings value to all life, yes, sir.
He is the right one. Did you have fun?
You know what, Jesse? And I really thank you for being respectful. I knew you'd put me in the hot seat, and I appreciate your kindness, though, still.
Right on, man. It was and I knew it would be an amazing conversation with you. And
thanks,
I have so much respect for you. I totally admire your energy. I like the way you deal with life. I think it's amazing.
Thank you very much, sir. I love you very, very much.
Same here. Tell the folks how they can get your books, how they can listen to your podcast. How do they keep up with what you're doing?
go to youtube.com/Nick Vujicic and check out the link. I'm sure you'll put a link up there. I started a podcast. I got a monologue going. I'm doing interviews, and we're about to position me as an executive strategist and also almost like a spiritual coach for CEOs. So that's coming up. Obviously, Instagram, Facebook, Nick Vujicic, but the website to go to is nickvujicic.com.
Spell the Vujicic for people because it's an unusual name.
It is very unusual. So Nick, N-I-C-K, and then Vujicic, V-U-J-I-C-I-C. That's the spelling of the name. And Jesse, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Would you ever be okay if I had a friend who gives some profits away, a friend who owns a coffee company who gives profits towards organizations leading the charge to end human trafficking?
Absolutely.
Can I tell people about my special friend?
You sure can.
I appreciate that, because when we look at all these issues, human trafficking is still so bad all around the world.
Yes.
And I've met slaves. And
I used to be a slave.
Say it again.
I used to be a slave.
You know what?
I'm just joking, Nick. I never was a slave.
I love you, man. But yeah, check it out. Storyville.com/Nick. Promo code Nick, and you'll actually get 50% off your subscription of coffee. And we are actually helping human trafficking right now. Thank you for allowing me to say that.
You're absolutely welcome. When I was said I was a slave, you know how black people say, oh, we were slaves. And I grew up in Alabama on a plantation under Jim Crow, and I never experienced any of that. But this human trafficking and sex slave, that's a very important issue. So you're absolutely welcome.
Love you very much, Jesse. I wish you all the best. And Godspeed to you. And thank you for allowing me, who also believes in God, but understanding that the truth is out there and the truth will set you free. So if anybody hasn't yet found the freedom and the real peace and strength of knowing that God loves us, that he's with us, is going to pull us through, keep searching. You'll find him.
Right on. You're doing an amazing job. Keep it up. All right.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. And thank you folks for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Check out our merch. Don't forget to like, follow, tweet, subscribe, ring the bell, patreon.com, and all that good stuff. And click the Patreon link in the description. Point down, support our work. Thank you again, Nick, and God bless you, man.
And thank you.
Yes, sir. It was amazing, Nick.
Next time on The Fallen State.
You drink 2 quarts of whiskey every day. You smoke 3 packs of unfiltered cigarettes.
Why not?
I was drinking 2 quarts of booze every day as I started every business that I've ever had. Truth can't possibly be solely in the hands of the strongest, the most brutal. Surely, if that is true, then God is indeed a demon. The mathematics of the blockchain, do you understand the freedom that gives?
I've known black women, dude.
I have known black women.
Shut up.
I'm just saying.
Can we avoid putting certain things about our lives on the internet?
We can't own smartphones. Please, people. They're the biggest spy devices ever created. The feds and many governments are watching and listening to everything.
Watching The Fallen State, we need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.